and also with you.
Let us pray. O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I think the fundamental lesson of Thanksgiving is that how grateful you are is not dependent on your immediate situation. I'll explain. Thanksgiving happens at the same time every year. The calendar doesn't stop and ask us if now is a good time. It doesn't check our bank account first before scheduling the holiday. It doesn't ask us who is sick or in rehab or whether or not we agree with whatever local or national politicians are up to these days. It just happens every year. Which must mean that gratitude is not, in fact, situationally dependent. It's not something that happens to us involuntarily when things go our way. It's not really a feeling at all. At least it isn't only a feeling. It's a choice. And not just a choice in how we react. Gratitude is a choice we make about how we look at the world as it is unfolding around us. Gratitude is the lens through which we look at our whole lives. Allow me to illustrate. In 1943, mechanical engineer Richard James set out to create springs that could keep sensitive ship equipment steady at sea. He built a machine that took 80 feet of wire and made 2-inch-wide coils out of it. He took out a loan of $500, which in today's money is $8,613.06. Isn't that depressing to think about? What's also depressing to think about is that after investing all of that in his invention, it failed. The springs were too springly to hold anything steady, and yes, springly is an engineering term, just ask my husband or my dad. I would know, I've been engineer adjacent my whole life. I practically am one. So anyway, Richard James, in frustration and anger, picks up a paperweight from his desk and he throws it at the shelf where he is storing his stupid, useless springs, and he knocks a few of them down in the process. But they didn't just fall off the shelf, as you might expect. They kind of cascaded off the shelf. They gracefully walked themselves down to the floor. He knocked a few more down just to make sure it wasn't a fluke, and then he repeated the experiment by knocking them from his desktop, and then he wanted to see what would happen if he pushed them down the stairs. And that's when it occurred to him. These springs may never work as a shipping solution, but they sure are fun to play with. Richard James had an eye on the goodness present, even what outsiders would call a total failure. That night, he scoured the dictionary looking for the perfect term for his new invention, and he decided that slinking was the best way to describe the way that his springs moved. He convinced Gimbel's department store in Philadelphia to do a demonstration of his slinkies walking themselves down the stairs as part of their massive Christmas toy display, and he sold out his initial batch of 400 slinkies in minutes. What we see in Richard James is a perfect example of how we, as faithful people, as people who know the richness of creation and the abundance of the God who created it, how we ought to react to adversity, to things not going our way, to unexpected setbacks, even to our own failures. Funny thing is, sometimes the people of God are the absolute worst at behaving as people of God ought to. I don't think we need to be discouraged about that. If anything, be encouraged in knowing that the shared history of our faith is full of failures and hotheads and dummies and generally less than desirable characters, and they still made it into the book. There is hope for us yet, friends. Speaking of less than desirable characters, can you imagine being stuck on a 40-year camping trip with anyone, first of all, let alone with this bunch of whiners? The situation is bad enough. It's hot, everybody has a sunburn all the time, nobody knows where they're going, and they get the same food every day. Add to that list the fact that your traveling companions have not stopped complaining for
from basically the moment you got to the desert, and you get the recipe for the worst vacation ever. It's not just that they were complaining, though, it's how they were complaining that really seemed to get under God's skin. See, they weren't just saying, man, I am sick of this food. They were saying, do you remember how good the food was in Egypt? Man, Pharaoh's chef made the best papyrus. Which is problematic because Egypt literally enslaved them. So them saying, you know, guys, we had it better in Egypt. It's kind of like saying we had it good when we were treated as less than human. Man, when we were made to be far less than you, God created us to be. Miss those days. So that's a bit of a slap in the face to the God who created them to be free and then freed them, don't you think? That's kind of like leaving an abusive partner, finding a partner who loves and respects you, and then telling that partner that you're dissatisfied with the relationship because your abusive ex was a really good cook. It shows an insane level of ingratitude. Look, God, I know you freed me from captivity. I know you parted the Red Sea. And you make it rain food every day so we don't have to worry about hunting or gathering. And you make water come out of that big rock over there. But, like, what have you done for me lately? Any hardship, any inconvenience, any discomfort is taken as reason enough to stop being grateful to God. I'm telling you, it would be pathetic if it weren't so darn relatable. Look, God, you gave me life, two parents who love me, a roof over my head, a good education, a good job, but my car just broke down and my hamster died last week, and now, honestly, I'm not convinced you even care about me anymore. We're impossible to please. And yet we think it's God's fault that we're never satisfied. God's reaction to this, though, to their complaints about having all the meat, they wanted in Egypt, but being forced into being vegetarians now that they're in the desert, God's response to all of this is, it's pretty fun, honestly. It's kind of like the parent that catches you with a cigarette and then makes you smoke the whole pack to teach you a lesson. The people ask for meat and God delivers, believe me. Usually God would feed the people by, at some point during the night, making manna come down from the sky, and manna just means, what is this? So we don't know what manna is. In my mind, I picture baklava. I always have, I don't know why, that's just what manna is in my head. It can be whatever you want it to be. So then the people would go out of their tents and they'd gather it up off the ground to eat throughout the day. And they always got exactly enough to last the day. And there was always a fresh supply in the morning. And anyone who tried to hoard more or squirrel away some for the next day out of a lack of trust that God would send more manna in the night would find that the manna they had saved would rot overnight. It wouldn't be any good the following day. Manna was equal parts sustenance, miracle, and test of faith. Will we rely on God to meet us here again tomorrow? Will God keep on caring for us? However, in light of recent complaints, God decided to change up the feeding schedule a bit. The people go to bed one night, expecting or at least hoping to wake up to manna once again, and what should they find all over the place where they would usually find manna but quail? A whole lot of quail. Too many quail, some would say. As the story goes, the whole camp was covered 2 cubits deep in quail. So a cubit is about here to here. So
one cubit is like that. Next cubit. So that's about 2 cubits. Now,
if you think my forearms aren't up to standard, Google will say that 2 cubits is about 3 feet. So let's do some math here. This is like those like middle school math word problems. Let's think about this. The absolute tallest quail you will ever find anywhere is 1 foot tall. And those are like the Shaquille O'Neal quails. Like the big boys are 1 foot tall. Most quail are even shorter than that. So that means that either the quails on the ground were stacked at least three deep, or the quails that God sent were the size of toddlers. And I can't decide which is scarier to me. The message here is pretty clear. A, God is hilarious. And B, you can get everything you ask for. And it will not make you happy if you're determined to be miserable. There will always be another reason to complain. How long do you think it took before the people started complaining about all those quails getting underfoot? Or how quail meat is really hard to stomach if you're trying to eat it for every meal? Or the poop. I give that point 3 seconds before they're just as mad as they were about not having any meat. You will never be grateful if your attitude does not allow gratitude. It's not about what's going on in your life. It's not about how spoily the springs are. It's not about manna or quail. It's about you. If you are struggling to find reason to be grateful this Thanksgiving, I would dare say that says more about you than it does about your circumstances. I'm not trying to sound cold or unempathetic. I know a lot of people are struggling in a lot of different ways. But I'll tell you what. It's never the people with the most reason to complain that are doing all the complaining. The people that seem to have the most on their shoulders, at least the ones I know in my life, they're the ones that always find reasons to be grateful, everywhere they look. It's usually the ones that have it pretty darn good that aren't ever satisfied. What you focus on grows. If you're looking for things to be upset about, I promise you're gonna find them. But the same is equally true if you're looking for things to be grateful for. You approach the world with that viewpoint and you won't be disappointed. Thanksgiving is coming, whether we've got the right attitude for it or not. You can let this opportunity for gratitude pass you by under the misguided notion that you don't have much to be thankful for this year, or you can let it change and heal you. You can let it give you joy and peace and a new outlook on your situation. And whether or not you do that isn't up to anyone or anything else but you. I invite you to join.